Well, let's get to it. This is Bitcoin Infinity Live, the second episode, and we're still going to discuss the boring old spam wars topic. And this time we have one of our favorite Bitcoiners here, and it's Mr. Bitcoin Mechanic. And why don't you bring him in? I bet he's bored at this point.
I'll bet you enjoyed that, didn't you, Mr. Mechanic?
Yeah, that was fun. Hi.
We're organized.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me. Always fun. Two of my favorite Bitcoiners.
Good to hear. So we have a live stream chat here. Good. Everything's up and running. Mechanic, I want to start off by asking you, what made you fall in love with Bitcoin in the first place? What was the thing about it that made you passionate about it?
I hate the government, and this was a tool that allowed them to lose all their ability over me. So all these things they were telling me I couldn't do, like donate to WikiLeaks or donate to Julian Assange directly or buy things on the Silk Road, all of those were just big, like, well, FUs, I'll try and keep it clean, to people I despised that had managed to weaponize technology against me. We're now in technology that could be used to root around them and their psychopathic need to control everyone and their self-defeating and self-contradictory rationalizations for their control freakery. I loved it and fell in love with it on that premise immediately. The economic stuff, like protection from inflation and stuff like that, I didn't understand that immediately, and no one does, because it's all confusing and we're all illiterate with how macroeconomics work, you know, somewhat intentionally. But obviously I love all that too, but that came later.
what does it mean if a user option is deprecated? That's a good question.
Well, she's technically right. It means it's still there, right? And this has been the crux of my whole argument with Core, because everything they say is technically correct, but they know how it will be received. I don't know what the term is, but it's called misleading people using the truth. It's not lies, so you can say, hey, that's true. Like, hey, if we filter spam, our fee estimation will get worse, or block propagation will slow down, or smaller miners will suffer, which is going to cause mining centralization. All of these things are true, but they don't matter if you put it in any kind of relevant context, but people aren't going to just do that. So that's why I find it so disingenuous, to use Shinobi's favorite word, is that they keep doing that, and they know how it's going to be received. We can get into all that stuff later, but the reality of it in Bitcoin Core, if something gets marked as deprecated, it means it's on the way out and it's open season. It's probably just going to be removed in some unrelated, you know, pull request in 6 months, and it'll just be gone without any ceremony. That's what it in reality means. Obviously, that's not an option in her poll. She's only saying it means it's still there, which is technically true. It does mean it's still there. You know what I mean, guys? It's just trying to make people think something that isn't I don't know why I don't have a word for this, because it's obviously a way of doing things that people can use in order to sway a debate and come out looking like they've never told any lies, when clearly everyone has the wrong impression about what's going on based on the things they said, even though everything they said was true. I don't know what that debating technique is called, but maybe one of you does. Any idea?
No, not really. Gaslighting? Is that the correct term for it?
Yeah. No, because gaslighting, you are just straight up lying, right? And there have been some straight up lies as well. But no, it's more just, I don't know. I guess it's just being intentionally misleading. But
yeah. So let's get that for those of you unaware of the whole thing, let's really start from the beginning here. So I wanted to double click on one of the things on the WikiLeaks thing. Like, what made you want to donate to WikiLeaks? Like, what were the things there, why were you passionate about that? If we start even further back here,
I was violently against the war in Iraq.
Okay.
And, well, I'll say violently. I don't mean like I was passionately opposed to it. There was a massive demonstration in London around the time it started. I was only a kid at the time, but, you know, I was walking around with a banner on it, you know, a placard against it. And, you know, Tony Blair was in charge at the time and they didn't give a crap. It was all just, well, we're going to do this and we're going to stand and fight with our brothers in Iraq. And it was just a complete, you know, it was so embarrassing. Britain didn't do anything in the Iraq war except get killed by friendly fire by Americans. I remember there was a stat in the Private Eye at some point not long after it had begun where it was 104 was the number, and that was the number of British soldiers killed by American troops, and 104 was the number of British soldiers also killed by Iraqis. So they were just there getting killed and shot at and doing nothing but being America's lapdog, and it was just humiliating. And then this whole transcript leaked from where Tony Blair and George Bush were sitting down at a press conference, and before it started, they didn't realize the microphones were on. And they had this conversation where Tony Blair was just on his knees, just saying, can we do this? Can we do that? And like, how can we help you? And George Bush is saying like, you know, whatever, I'll let you know what you're supposed to be doing, you know, soon. And it was such an embarrassing and pathetic thing because Tony Blair, when he first came in, we all thought it was amazing. We thought Britain was finally going to be getting over this just hump it had been in for a long time. And this guy was just completely cowardly, pathetic, same as Justin Trudeau. You know, WikiLeaks was out there just giving us all this information and blowing a whistle, literally, on the whole thing and making everyone see what was really going on and how awful it was. And they got all that pushback, right? And it just suddenly held a mirror up to the entire industry of journalism, which was all these cowardly sycophants that would write articles why we need to go to war in Iraq and, you know, how terrible Saddam Hussein is and the ridiculous claims about weapons of mass destruction. And what was it, 45 minutes, they said? Saddam Hussein can launch something and attack London in 45 minutes. These were all the claims they made. They were complete lies. It was a complicit media just doing the government's business. And people say, don't call it the mainstream media anymore. Call it government media. And WikiLeaks was finally real media. And personally as well, he was in Britain, right? So I felt really like I could go to the Ecuadorian embassy some years later and there he would be. And that was about, you know, right after I found out about Bitcoin at Occupy. He came to Occupy where I was at and he gave us a speech there and he was still under house arrest at the time. But, you know, not long after that, he had to go and relocate to the Ecuadorian embassy where he stayed until they just decided to violate international law and walk in there and just rip him out and then threw him in Belmarsh, which is one of the worst prisons in the UK, and stuck him in there forever until, you know, his family heroically just managed to fight hard enough to actually get him out.
No, and so that led you into Bitcoin and to being passionate about it. That it was the big middle finger to the man, right? So
basically,
and this is quite early on. So the quote unquote war we're fighting right now is like the third civil war in Bitcoin. If you count the three big ones are like the up return wars, the block size wars, which is the real big one. And now if you can even call this a war, more of a quabble maybe or whatever it is. But like the first up return wars, that was about, what was that about? Was that about if op returns should be introduced or not? And like, can you give us the history there?
I don't know well enough to just recite it. I've read what I've read, and what's his name? BitMEX Research wrote an article on it. The general attitude back then, right, was just spammers want to do stuff. How do we stop it? Now it's spammers want to do stuff. How can we help them and minimize the negative effects of it? The mitigation was always a thing, but it's the mitigation now is taken on degrees of, you know, just levels of patheticness that it's kind of hard to stomach because it doesn't really do anything at this point. The chain is just utterly full of trash at this point. And, you know, I mean, the inscriptions hack really just changed the game with everything, but we'll get into that. The opera term was, I don't know enough to give good context on it. I should, and I apologize for not really knowing it, but...
What I know, opera term was introduced to reduce the spamming that could be done by faking addresses and stuff and faking public keys.
It's to give them a less harmful area to spam. Like, I can explain the rationale behind opera term very well because it's defensible. It's great. There's a reason it's there, and there's a reason not, which is the anti-spam side of this whole thing, allows people... by default, still permits 40 bytes of op return. It doesn't permit zero because that's enough. You can do so much with it. You can run a whole side chain, which is enough, and you can anchor it into Bitcoin as necessary with those 40 bytes. That's what Nick Szabo said. Don't store your data in Bitcoin. Hash your data and then use op return. Or he didn't say use op return, but you know, store the hash of all of your data in Bitcoin. Then you can do so much with that. You don't need to be putting everything into the chain. But just saying to people it's going to be expensive if you do is not a sufficient disincentive. You have to just be annoying in every way you can and just make it so that, again, no one minded open timestamps, right? No, as I keep saying, no one went to war over open timestamps because it's not a big deal. Peter Todd with that is not just being egregiously disrespectful to Bitcoin. And triggering any sort of response from people that run nodes to say, I'm not going to participate in this. But people that are trying to store JPEGs on 85,000 unwilling people who are trying to use Bitcoin as money, to use the English expression, they're taking the piss. And that's something where you go, all right, I'm not going to do this anymore. And it does become incumbent on Bitcoin Core to say, fair enough, you want the tools to not participate in this? Let's go. And here is a filter that, you know, works in knots that Luke wrote that we're trying to get inside Bitcoin. It's ridiculously irresponsible to look at something like that and go, nah, we're not going to do it. There isn't any excuse for that. And I think we'll go into more of the details over the next hour or so.
Yeah. I mean, back in 2016, I took an online course in digital currencies at the University of Nicosia. Andreas Antonopoulos was one of the teachers, with one of the reasons I signed up for it. And that's basically where my first, like, studying Bitcoin thing. And the grades from that course, everyone's grades, was in a document, or I got a diploma and stuff, and that was put in as a hash in op return, so you could like see, but the document stored elsewhere. So the whole point is like the spam is so ridiculous because you could do that to anything. It's the interpretations of the things are always on third party services anyway. Like so the whole premise is ridiculous from the get-go. So like, regardless of where you stand on this issue, like, I think everyone agrees, or everyone should agree, that these things are bullshit and they could be stored elsewhere. It's just that some actors may or may not get paid by the spammers and scammers themselves to have the other opinion. Like, because obviously they wouldn't have to do anything about spam filters and making them even and removing them if they didn't do anything. So like, yeah, we're getting there. But first, there's a big event here in between. I want to get the history correct here, because like, what kind of impact did the block size wars have on your view of Bitcoin? Like, was your belief strengthened by the outcome? Like, what were you doing during the time? Like, what's your recollection of that?
So this war is the same as the block size war, because it comes down to the same thing. What's the priority? Is it anything that in any way undermines the sovereignty of nodes, or makes it harder or more expensive to run nodes, or diminishes the motivation for anyone to run a node, any of that stuff? If it is, it's the wrong direction. That was the point in the block size wars. Like, yeah, you want to have cheaper transactions for longer. You want to have more block space available for people to use Bitcoin. I get it. I want that too. I want cheap transactions for longer. I don't want to be paying a fortune before, you know, things like Lightning are even demonstrated to work, or any other sort of semi-acceptable solution, like things like Liquid or other side chains. We get it. Like, those work, but we know they're not as good as Bitcoin, and we want L1 Bitcoin to be as available as possible to everyone for as long as possible. It's not great if it costs you hundreds or thousands of dollars to make an on-chain transaction. And there's all that, you know, can you buy a coffee on-chain and stuff? But the people that wanted that weren't prepared to ever seriously talk about the trade-offs, which was, if they'd have gotten what they wanted, which was when they started being a bit more reasonable, they wanted 20 megabyte blocks, right? Instead of 1 megabyte plus, you know, all the, whatever you call it, weight stuff. They wanted that. And that was unacceptable as a trade-off. And they never really, you know, really acknowledged it. They always just said, oh, hard drive space is getting cheaper, and network connections are getting faster, so it'll be fine. But they never really took it seriously or engaged with it. They all just went straight to politics, right? Which is largely what has happened in this debate too, but I don't think it's anything like as egregious. But anyway, the point with that is, if we'd have had 20 megabyte blocks since 2017, who's going to be running a node in that environment? You might have a few thousand, but you're not going to have 85,000. And the point is, once you send that signal out there that we don't really care how much it costs to run a node, this is just some free service that will be done by someone. I'm sorry, it isn't. Miners don't mine unless they can make something like a bit of money. I mean, I'm probably going to regret saying that because it contradicts a point of view I have in another context. But if miners aren't loving it and they turn off, then the difficulty goes down. And then that motivates people to start mining again. Great. Bitcoin has a corrective mechanism in it for miners and their motivation to mine. Nodes don't have that. So if you start tweaking variables and making it harder for nodes to operate, they just turn off and that's the end of them. You can, by virtue of other things, you can motivate people to start running them, and you can invoke improvements in technology to say more people might be doing it. Great. But the trend is always in the wrong direction anyway with nodes. Every time, for every 100 new Bitcoiners there are, there's going to be one or two of them that actually run a node. And the worse that ratio gets worse and worse. At the beginning of Bitcoin, 100% of Bitcoiners ran nodes. That was all that, because it was the only wallet that existed. You just had to download the Bitcoin app, and it wasn't called Bitcoin Core yet. So this is what I learned in the block size wars, was what's actually important here. What separates us from the rest of crypto is the ability to run a node, because that's what makes us actually decentralized. And that isn't a priority in any of the other networks, because they all have too many features for it to be possible for you to run a node. Ethereum being the perfect example, because it's feature maxing and sovereignty minimizing. So it's no surprise that you have all these ETH migrants coming into Bitcoin that want to start talking about all these interesting and fun things you can do on Bitcoin, sometimes paying lip service to it, taking pressure off L1 and doing more with the block space we have, which is the essence of scaling. Great. But generally the attitudes they have is just, someone will run a node. We hope they do. We don't really care about whether we make that easier or harder beyond paying lip service to decentralization. So that was what I learned during that time. And that whole struggle echoes in this, because no one is saying, why don't nodes want to relay this spam? What's actually in it for them to do it? How much of a compromise is it to other parts of the ecosystem if they stop doing that, if they refuse? Instead, we're being told, no, you just have to. And you're motivated to, because otherwise Mara will make even more money with Slipstream. And that will centralize mining, and then centralized mining means we're dead. So I'll go into why I think that's all nonsense, but me rejecting that is nothing like, because I'm getting compared to big blockers and people telling me I'm going to rage quit or fork or whatever. No, I think I'm being a lot more reasonable than that. I don't think the concerns around centralization of mining are serious, because mining is already centralized and none of the people invoking it seem to actually care about that beyond saying, let's just relax the spam filters and we'll stop it getting a little bit worse. And ultimately the burden of proof is, you know, it's on the people that want to keep getting rid of filters, because we've had them forever. We've always treated arbitrary data storage with hostility, and we only ever really I don't know how united we were, but giving them 40 bytes of op return was non-controversial to my mind, or it should have been, and we did it, and that was the sandbox for these arbitrary data enjoyers to go and play. And if they're not satisfied with that, constantly making concessions and refusing to update filters for any workaround they use is an admission of defeat, and it only ends up in a scenario where people are less and less motivated to run nodes, and we become more and more like a crypto rather than this unique, special thing.
Because when and why was it increased to 83?
I don't know. I think it moved several times. And again, I apologize for not knowing the history here, because I should, but I think it got bumped up, then down, then back up again. 83, it's not 83, right? It's just 80. It says 40, 4 has 80. If you say it's 83 sometimes, or it's 82 or 81, it depends. The thing is, you have to actually declare what it is, and that's part of the data in it. So a 42-byte op return is 42 bytes. Is 40 bytes of data plus 2 bytes saying I am an op return. So kind of a given, right? Like, and it's the same with, because you have two, I think you're doing two declarations or something. Yeah. I'm going to get dunked on for being technically inaccurate.
Well, it's the first and the last, right? I think I remember this from, don't you know this, Luke? Like verifying some a message you send in binary.
Anyway, not the specifics, but anyway, it's 80 bytes though, which is still not crazy, right?
No,
it's nothing compared to the 100,000 bytes they want to make accessible now, right? Like big blockers wanted to go from 1 megabyte to 20 megabytes, and then I think they kept negotiating, going, all right, what about 10 megabytes? What about 5 megabytes? They just kept being ridiculous with their numbers. So like Bitcoin Core blowing it out from, you know, we went from 40 bytes to 80 bytes. I think, like I say, I think they went back to 40 and then it went back to 80 again. All the way up to 100,000. That seems reckless to me. And the only thing they have to say about it is, well, they're never going to use more than 150 anyway, because then the inscriptions hack gets cheaper and there's no filter there either. So we might as well get rid of the filter on op return. Now, I think that's a ridiculous position, and I'm willing to defend why I think that, but it's just so sloppy. To act like throwing a limit out of the window like that is just something you can casually do.
Are you familiar with Jevons' paradox?
Yes.
When things become cheaper, people will use them more. That's sort of the point. Like, it's not like, okay, we'll use everything. We'll just be happy that it got cheaper and use whatever we're using now. No, people will use more of it. So like, if you make spamming cheaper, people will spam more. Increasing the size without punishing that is making it cheaper, right?
Yeah, it's, you know, if you turn like something that became a bit of a footpath in the middle of a jungle into a 6-lane highway, there's going to be more use of that. You don't get to go, oh, well, only 6 people walk through here a week, so that's how many we can expect if we turn it into a road. Like, I made this prediction, right? And I wasn't being sarcastic. I said, prediction, if you blow out the op return limits, there'll be a lot more op returns of larger size than there are now. And everyone's like, you don't say. And I'm like, well, apparently that's like a thing we're just assuming will just stay the same, right? Because it's so trivial to get around the op return limit now that when we get rid of the limit, we'll have exactly the same amount. Well, I mean, that they simultaneously make that argument, and then they also make the argument that if you, it will actually be more than it is currently, but at least the additional use of it didn't make use of slipstream, right? It made use of the nodes relaying it around, which is better because that prevents mining centralization or something like that, right? And again, they're technically right, but the context of it means that's just an insulting way to frame things, given the current context and state of mining anyway, and what we actually have to do to combat centralization in mining. So,
I think that one of the biggest misconceptions, I mean, Bitcoin is full of all these metaphors that are quite okay, but not quite describing Bitcoin, right? Because it can't be described in things from the past terms, because they're not enough to explain what the system is doing. And one of the biggest one, in my opinion, is that the notion that miners find the Bitcoin, which is not how that works. I had a great conversation with Bob Burnett about this. What miners actually find is blocks, and the good they provide is block space, and they get paid by Bitcoiners to do this in the subsidy and the fees. And that's why, and as you say, the difficulty algorithm it works both ways. So that's why I found it so strange when Peter Todd started talking about this emissions stuff, for instance, and that we needed more than 21 million and a tax on this catering to miners thing. Like, why do we owe miners anything? We're already paying them.
No, they're just employees. Just employees. If they don't like it, don't be a miner. I'm not going to move stuff around and keep moving goalposts. Because here's the stupidest part of it. It doesn't help them either. If you start paying miners more money, that just means there are more miners fighting over the same amount, which ultimately just undoes the benefit of it. If you do the opposite of a halving, for example, all that happens is twice as many people start mining straight after, and then you are earning exactly the same as if we'd done nothing. The whole benefit of Bitcoin is that we don't have bureaucrats and committees moving variables around in order to try and help with refunnel money from this part of the ecosystem, i.e. the people using Bitcoin as savings, to this part of the economy instead. Like, this is... Is there more fundamental a principle in Bitcoin to break than thinking you can be a central planning economist that can move value around within a system and somehow improve it? Like, is Bitcoin not the assertion that it's never, ever worth it or never actually possible to do? So just leave all the variables fixed and stop screwing around with it. So when Peter Todd comes out and says, you know, the 21 million maxis are idiots and they need to... You know, I just can't believe the ignorance of that. And it's a perfect example of this thing everyone's so annoyed about, with just because you know how to write software doesn't mean you understand anything about economics. And so when core developers want to be dismissive of the opinions of Bitcoiners, they're making a mistake for two reasons, because those Bitcoiners might understand this stuff a lot better than them. You know, what Bitcoin is to humans rather than how it's written. But not only that, but it gets even more frustrating because, you know, I'll come back to that point in a bit. Let's just continue on this thread.
Yeah. So speaking of that, one argument I hear a lot from the other side is the concept of economic nodes. So what counts really is nodes where you verify that the Bitcoin that you receive are real Bitcoins. You already know that the ones you're sending are real, so that has no impact. It's the ones you receive, right? That's the definition of an economic node.
I think so. I think that Mr. Hodl is the one that's always getting pedantic about them having to be economic nodes, and that's because indications to the network of what's popular and how decentralized we are not Sybil resistant, because there's no proof of work really in spinning up a node. So someone can spin up 1,000 Knots nodes if they want on an Amazon web server. It doesn't actually mean anything, right? Because it doesn't represent actual economic activity. But I also think that's not as big of a deal as it used to be, because so many of the people that run nodes are doing it with things like Start9s and Umbrals and Raspberry Blitzes and things like that. And those are all really trivial to use for economic purposes, because they had one-click install for things like mempool space and lightning nodes and other things and wallets, right? Other things you would actually use on top of it. Because a Bitcoin node doesn't do anything except sync up to the tip of the network and relay stuff around. It's not really doing anything. But who's running nodes like that anymore? If you're not really able to do the complicated stuff, then you're going to run these services that actually make it really easy to be a Lightning user and stuff like that, in which case, yeah, you are an economic node. And throughout the ugliness of BTC++, no one accused Knots, the ramp-up of Knots to 9% of the network, as being fake or something. I was ready for them to start saying, oh, it's all fake. Unfortunately, like a few days after it, everyone started saying, oh, it's all Amazon Web Server, and it isn't. Luke's stats exclude Amazon Web Server, actually, because he considers it all one node. If you have 1,000 nodes running on Amazon, he says they're just, that's just one node run by Amazon. So he's being an ideologue there. That would work against our own objectives as trying to present the network as being genuinely migrating over to knots from core. And we saw the core node count drop as well. So that meant people were switching from core to knots, and that's genuine. But there's also been a rise in nodes overall, and it just fits with the messages I'm getting. But yeah, people can call BS on it if they want.
So from what I understand, knots nodes are increasing like more nodes are upgrading to knots or are switching to knots than are upgrading to the latest version of core. I think that's true. But yeah,
there's more knots nodes than the latest version of core.
Yeah.
But I can check Clark Moody and verify.
Yeah. So here's like where I think that there are so many false dichotomies in Bitcoin. What the store of value medium exchange is my favorite false dichotomy. I think they're two sides of the same coin, literally, but also like ideology and technology, like that we should be, that there is such a thing as like an ideologue and a technologist. We are all part of the same network. And like the node is not the piece of software. It's the person who decides to do stuff. Right. And to run the software, buy the hardware and run the software. The software and the hardware are just the tools in our toolbox that we use to voice our opinion on, and then to use the network the way we want to use it. And like the opt-in is, that's all it is. Like, if Bitcoin goes to shit and we all decide to go to, an altcoin instead. That's the first and the last time I'm going to use that term because I prefer the term shitcoin. But if we all decide that, and by we, I mean us honest people, that something else is actually better, we will. Like, the whole point is this optionality thing, right? And yeah, you will suffer the consequences of your choices. So if you make the wrong choice and you buy Bitcoin Cash or Bitcoin Satoshi's Vision, all your money disappears. That is one of the effects of choosing that chain over a better one.
They still tend to do better than fiat, though, somehow. Yeah. Fiat is that bad that Bcash remains like somewhat of a hedge against.
Yeah, but that's why shitcoins still exist, because people are using the wrong denominator. They should denominate everything in Bitcoin, and the world becomes much clearer what's actually going on. Like, this is the correct lens to view the world through.
Yeah, my house keeps losing value in terms of Bitcoin. That's reality.
Yeah,
right. I don't care if it went up 500 grand since I bought it in Canadian dollars. Who cares? No. It's irrelevant.
No, and I think this is the biggest misconceptions. Like, miners don't find Bitcoin. They find blocks, and we pay them to find blocks because we want to buy block space to facilitate for our transactions, and not for JPEGs. Not for, like, intellectual property is bullshit anyway. Well,
that's a side gig for a miner. And you don't ever want an employee to have a side gig, because it means you lose influence over what their behavior is. You want your employee, if we're just talking about raw motivations here and not paying much regard to how it's going to sound reminiscent of slavery, that's the motivation. It's horrible. But if your employee has a bunch of other options and can work for other people that aren't you, you lose influence over what they do. They can negotiate a lot harder, and you don't really want that. If miners are getting paid for doing stuff that isn't Bitcoin, then you lose control over what they're doing, and they become less motivated to actually do what's good for the Bitcoin network. And that's no good, because they are security guards. So to that end, if they're making a bunch of money doing stupid stuff on Bitcoin, but complying with some sort of green ESG initiative that says if you can fit within the parameters we set for consuming a certain amount of green energy, then we'll give you a tax discount. Or if you're in Canada and you want to use a third party to make your templates for you and custody everything that comes out of the chain, you don't have to pay sales tax anymore. So we'll give you a 50% tax rebate, which is actually what happens. All of these things are miners earning, they're paying money, then having some of it being given back to them by governments in order to not be sovereign Bitcoin miners, but instead be mercenary hashers. None of that's good. And they're all economically, it's correct if you're just like, what are they economically motivated to do? But none of it's okay. And like I pointed out this morning with MARA's OFAC compliance, we went apeshit over that because we said this violates Bitcoin censorship resistance. And some people tried to say, and it's economically irrational. You will lose money versus a miner that includes those OFAC censored transactions, and they will make more than you and you'll go out of business. That's just not realistic, is it? Because miners are going to, there's a certain amount of financial gain to complying with government regulations. No one wants to KYC all their clients because it's economically irrational to have someone or a whole team in your mining pool or your mining facility that has to constantly deal with bureaucratic crap. It's got nothing to do with Bitcoin, but if you don't do it, you're not going to be allowed to exist as a business at all. So the economically rational thing to do in some cases doesn't appear economically rational if you're just looking at Bitcoin and ignoring the context in which it exists. But MARA didn't stop with the OFAC compliant blocks because we convinced them that they could make a tiny bit more money if they put those transactions in their blocks. They did it because we went nuts at them over Twitter and their stock price started falling. And, you know, I think their CEO even got fired over it. That was what actually stopped it, right? And you can argue that's all economic, but you can't say it's all native to Bitcoin. Because who cares? Bitcoin is not going to punish you ruthlessly for excluding a couple of transactions from your blocks. 99% of what you're earning right now is 3.125 Bitcoin that comes in the form of subsidy. Miners could just mine empty blocks if they wanted and make basically the same amount of money. It's insignificant, the financial pressure that transaction fees actually create.
Yeah, I mean, Bitcoin is the irony is the most fragile and most anti-fragile system at the same time, because it's only anti-fragile because we are. Like, it depends on us being anti-fragile, like, and doing the work and protecting this thing because of all of these. Like, when the name of the game is money, all these scammers and morally questionable people flock to it. Of course they do. That was the shitcoins. Like, I remember the first crypto conference I went to, like, this was before I went to a Bitcoin conference. I was just stunned by the sheer number of scammers there, almost everyone. And it's because it is when money is the name of the game, like, that's what everyone's competing for. So of course you get all the scammiest people. That's why central banking and banking in general is what it is, because it attracts the worst people that are only doing things for money. So you have this tiny segment of Bitcoiners that are ethically sound and correct. And we've slain so many heroes over the years. Like, so many of the OG Bitcoiners that were public just went insane or started scamming and just dropped off. This is still an experiment. We still have to see if we can be resistant to all of these bad powers that try to influence us all the time. And, like, so what I guess there's a question in here somewhere. What is your stance there? Like, do you still believe in Bitcoin? Do you think we will win? And if not, how can we tell that we've lost?
You're asking me, within the frame you put it, if I still believe in people, basically. And that's what it is. It's, I believe in Bitcoin. I don't know if I believe in people's ability to use it the way they should if they had any self-respect. I find it ridiculous that 99% of the miners on the network are mining blocks containing transactions they had no say in. That's not Bitcoin. And I find it ridiculous that people would ever buy ETFs instead of money they can control unilaterally. I find that ridiculous. And I find the ratio to be getting worse and worse as things proceed. And pragmatically, the only thing I can ever come up with as a solution to human just complacency is constant aggression and hostility from the authorities. It's the only thing that the only thing that makes people value freedom is impositions on their liberty. If you stop allowing people to do things and you're draconian in how you do it, that makes people realize why they might want a firearm and why they might want FU money. Until then, people just don't get it. And they just want someone else to custody their coins for them because they can't be bothered to figure out self-custody for themselves. And I don't think there is a solution for complacency. I think people will always gravitate towards centralized custodial solutions in this space until things like Mt. Gox happen, and they need to happen regularly. You need some massive blow up like Mt. Gox every single cycle to teach every new entrant that it's not a game. You actually need to control your own coins. And if you don't, you probably don't have the Bitcoins you think you do. And Mt. Gox was the best thing to ever happen to Bitcoin. And it gave us a decade of people that were just militant about not your keys, not your coins. Withdraw them immediately. Never trust the exchange. Use peer-to-peer exchanges if you can. Buy with cash if you can. It entrenched that mentality so well into people. And it just gets forgotten about. That's the problem. And we've had, like, every time it gets less significant as well. I mean, Mt. Gox was so big, right? There's not an exchange doing 85% of the world's Bitcoin trading at the moment. That just doesn't exist. It's too widespread now. But Mt. Gox blowing up was the biggest blessing in disguise ever. But it sounds perverse if I advocate for horrible things like that, for politicians that want to make Bitcoin illegal, the accelerationist angle. If I push for stuff like that, people are like, you're insane. And I'm like, well, wait till you see what happens if we have Bitcoin-friendly politicians in the White House. Wait and see how bad that gets. No one is going to self-custody anything. No one's going to run a node. And 21 million becomes a joke in that environment. How do you do it? You lobby and you explain to people and you make them passionate about it and you say, you got to run a node, you got to be sovereign. But there's nothing quite as effective as government saying Bitcoin's illegal. Then everyone's running a node necessarily, or they're in jail.
No, and you can see that how politicians approach Bitcoin. It's never scrap the capital gains tax. You never hear that from a politician. All you hear is about this.
We'll buy some.
Strategic reserves. Yeah. And
by which I mean, we'll give ourselves some of yours.
Exactly.
And we celebrate this. It's a complete LARP. It's really embarrassing. And, you know, this is where I start turning into this misanthrope, where I'm just so upset with the mentality of Bitcoin is how not cypherpunk it is.
No, it is kind of ridiculous, but which is also, by the way, why I think there's no such thing as an uneconomic node, because we all act as nodes. Like, no node exists in a vacuum. Everyone has their incentives, economic or otherwise, that play on that influence how a person acts, what a person does. If a person does the homework and buys a node and runs the software, all of that is connected. So like they use podcasters as a derogatory term, but we're a node here in relaying information to people, trying to wake people up. Like,
it's a silly pedantry that, again, it's a sliding scale. Like, obviously Coinbase's node and Foundry's nodes are more relevant than a guy that is running Bitcoin knots on a Raspberry Pi and doesn't have that node doing anything except just running a redundant copy of the chain and relaying transactions around with more discrimination than a core node might, right? Like, I get that they're not the same thing, but you don't get to say one's economic and one isn't. They're just of different levels of influence.
Yeah, and there's no objective way of measuring that influence. I think that's what I'm trying to say. Like, that, of course, Coinbase node, for instance, it's going to be more influential, but it certainly took a hit today when they were hacked. And had to admit they were hacked. Real Bitcoiners have been saying hashtag delete Coinbase since 2016, I think, or at least 2017.
Well, when did Brian commit to never using the word Bitcoin and only crypto? When was that?
That was after the block size wars, right? Because he was on the wrong side of that. I remember that. He was promoting all those shit forks like XT stuff, right?
Well, he was a New York agreement guy. But they messed up. They split their energy between SegWit2x and Bcash.
And he's the embodiment of Bitcoin is for enemies, because he lost that war. He was our enemy, and he's still here, and he's still very influential.
He's not going anywhere.
No, he's not.
But they've got a pathetic amount of Bitcoins, right? Coinbase. They should be the richest company in the world right now, and they've got like a couple of thousand Bitcoins, and that's it.
I thought they custodied Strategy's Bitcoin.
Well, I mean, depending on what you want to... I believe ownership is not...
Oh, okay, so they don't own that many, but they possess very...
they control it. They control it, they custody it, but they don't own it. Because I'm never going to concede that if you come and hit me with a wrench and I have to give up my Bitcoins to you, that you become the owner of them. You stole them and they're still mine. So I'm never going to concede that. But...
Okay, well, let me double click on that. Because like... That is not in line with not your keys, not your coins. So, like, well, not really. Like,
well, no, I agree with you. No. To me, not your keys, not your coins points to the fact that you're putting yourself in a position where someone else can rob from you trivially. It's not. I'm never going to say that if you have. Look, I have Bitcoins that other people I cannot trust with the responsibility of having private keys have delegated to me. I don't get to sit here and say that those are my coins now. No way.
Okay.
My mom needs me to store like what she has, right? I'm not going to give her the private key. Not again. Not after what she did last time. So not doing that again.
A good point.
But I'm never going to say that her coins are mine. They're just not. Like ownership is a different thing. Like you said intellectual property is nonsense, but I disagree. I think it's a very interesting discussion to have. But I think intellectual property is valid as a concept. And I think if I'm saying not your keys, not your coins is a good example of it. I think Andreas coined that phrase, right? And if I come up with ideas in the space, if I'm on podcasts or whatever, and I'm saying something that people hadn't realized about Bitcoin and they're like, oh, that's really interesting. If it's someone else who tweeted it or thought about it, I'm going to pay homage to that. I'm going to be like, well, here's the guy that came up with that, this way of looking at Bitcoin. Because I do think people deserve credit for ideas and things like that. I don't think like, pay a royalty every time you want to cook pasta to someone in Italy. Like, I don't think that, right? But you know what I'm saying?
yeah. Okay. So let me flesh a couple of points out for you. And I'd love to pick your brain about it, how you view this way of looking at it. So the way I see it, there are three levels of ownership. And the top one is what we call ownership, which is, they're legally yours, like regardless if this is Bitcoin or anything else, like something is legally yours. And the deeper level is possession. So I can steal your car. It's legally yours. So you own it, but I possess it. Same with the custodied Bitcoin. Not your keys, not your coins is to me, that's even a level deeper because it's not possession. Because it's information and it's not ownership. Well, it can be ownership, but it cannot be, it's not really possessed since it's just knowing a number. That's all it is. And the knowing the number allows you to act as if you owned the thing because you know that the probability that someone else owns, knows the same number, the private key, or the location of the private key or the PIN code or whatever, it's always a secret. So, you know that the probability that someone else knows it is low, very, very low. You also know that the probability that the Bitcoin network will just suddenly stop existing or that spammers will take over completely. Or like what I'm saying is like you say that you own them, but in reality, you just know a secret and you expect that secret to be valuable because you expect the rules to not change in a destructive way. You're following me here? So that's why when you first acquire the Bitcoin, you don't expect Peter Todd's tail emissions thing to ever come to fruition. You expect the 21 million to still be 21 million 21 years down the line. But it's all about keeping a secret from someone. And that secret is always in some person's head. So like, to me, like, this is like when I really try to be a armchair philosopher about Bitcoin, this is like the deepest insight that the only reason that they are scarce, the only reason that we found something on the internet that we cannot copy is because it's not on the internet. It's in our heads. Like, it's part of us. Like, the Satoshi possesses me and not the other way around. What are your thoughts around this? Is this too?
As you say, like, there are no real maps and analogies you can use for stuff like this. Nothing fits onto it as an analogy. So This is, yeah, it's public crypto, public key cryptography. Be crazy is basically the only thing I can say to that. It's nuts. I don't. This, you have to keep a secret. Your ability to keep that secret is your ability to control something. But like I say, I don't believe that to be ownership. I really do believe it's you can own someone else's. Someone else can control the coins that you own. I do think that is cognate with our understanding of those terms as they exist. For the reason I said before, I don't think if someone steals my coins or someone learns my private keys, that doesn't change anything about who the owner of those things is. From the Bitcoin network's perspective, it's neutral. It's not going to treat us as distinct people. It doesn't have any concept of that. Whoever generates the valid transaction gets in the chain. But I think we would all agree that if someone hacked an exchange or hacked you, like Luke, okay, he got hacked, 200 Bitcoin stolen. I don't think anyone in the world is, well, probably some trolls will, but I don't think if we find who that is and we're like, you have to give those back, I don't think anyone's going to say, no, he has the private key now, so they're his. So like this sort of blew the whistle on the whole NFT thing, right? When someone had their OpenSea account hacked and someone stole their NFTs. And the guy, I think it was it Seth Green? He posted like, someone's stolen my NFTs, and he put pictures up.
Yeah.
And everyone went, those aren't yours anymore. Like, like it's because, and then the fact that everyone's like, don't be silly. Of course they're mine. Then you're like, okay, exactly. Making the entire concept of trying to attach private keys to this ethereal concept of ownership a LARP. And in the context of NFTs, it's silly. In the context of Bitcoin, of it means something. But it was a funny thing for that whole thing. The way it went down was just so funny.
Right? Yeah.
They literally aren't yours anymore, according to the theory of how NFTs works. But no one actually believes that, making the whole thing really stupid. Like, because you can actually have the JPEG. It's not this. Having the public key or the UTXO doesn't mean anything without the private key because you can't spend it. Having the JPEG is, to all intents and purposes, the same as knowing the private key that deterministically generates that NFT, right? It doesn't mean anything.
No, it's the equivalent of having a paper saying that I own a star in the Andromeda galaxy.
Well, like, that too, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So like it's there. It's legally mine. I can't do anything with it. Everyone else can see it too. Like, it doesn't matter. The difference with a shitcoin on Bitcoin.
There's no enforced interpretation, right? So the scientists can carry on calling it OX89371B or something like theta, gamma, x-ray, whatever. Like, they can carry on calling it that. They're not obliged to call it your wife's name.
Tatooine. But the difference with the shitcoins on Bitcoins is that they, like, if you want to look at those stars in the Andromeda galaxy that are the dick butts on Bitcoin, they do fuck up your telescope, like, when you're trying to look at them. So they're not in the Andromeda galaxy. They're just dots on the other side of the telescope.
That's true.
This is metaphor land. Let's get into the defining the you look tired already, but what these things are, the fake things that they try to scam people with. So ordinals, inscriptions, stamps, in what order are they bad for Bitcoin, and why, and what are we doing to make them go away?
So it's a huge topic. Ordinals are their own horrible thing, because they try to undermine fungibility. They try to superimpose a system of values that, that places different values on the same sized UTXOs. In this case, one sat. They're trying to say that some sats are more valuable than others, and they call them rare sats. And any system that superimposes differing value attribution onto a monetary system undermines its fungibility. Whether it's someone saying, I have a lucky quarter is a pain in the butt because you have to remember that it's different from all your other quarters. And that's, but it doesn't, It's minimal in how disruptive it is as a money. It only affects things for you. It doesn't affect things for other users of that money. But when you have more widespread adoption of some sort of protocol for valuing different units of a currency with different values, that becomes a problem. That's what KYC is. KYC free coins versus KYC coins. So many people treat them as different, right? I have one Bitcoin here that I bought on Coinbase, and I have another Bitcoin here that I got from as a result of selling cocaine in Peru or something. Like, those you might place different values on, whether you give more to the KYC coin or less. The KYC is a system of interpretation superimposed onto Bitcoin. To Bitcoin, they're both 100 million sats in size UTXO. That's it. But to the outside world, they're not the same. And the more we acquiesce to systems that tell us some coins are good and some coins are bad, even though Bitcoin has no such concept, the less functional it becomes as a money. Cash is so dumb that it doesn't really matter. But if you have $1 million in cash and you try and put it into a bank, then it suddenly becomes non-fungible again, which ruins its function as a currency, because you have to explain the origins of that cash, what you did with it, who had it in, you know, who had it in their possession. There are serial numbers on this thing, but generally cash is dumb enough that on a small scale, no one cares. So if you buy, you know, if you go and buy, you know, something at a farmer's market or a restaurant for $20, no one cares about the origin of the $20, and they don't care if it's this $20 or that $20. But when you scale up, it starts to become a problem. So the undermining of fungibility is something that always just makes money really cumbersome and defeats its function. You don't want to have to care. You don't want things to happen like caring about the origin of the money, because it suddenly ruins its whole efficiency.
So, where is this numbering? Sorry for interrupting, but where is it stored? Like with the
externally.
Ordinals?
So Bitcoin doesn't care about, there's no ordering of sats within a UTXO. Okay. A UTXO is just a size. Just like, what's the best analogy here? It's usually temperature is what I like to use. Like if it's 20 degrees outside and at night it drops down to 10 degrees, then tomorrow it goes up to 12 degrees. You don't get to say, oh, the 11th and 12th degree we added since it was is coldest were actually yesterday the 17th and 14th degree that we had then. And one of those is more valuable than the others, and we're going to trade ownership of it. Like, this is a farcical interpretation superimposed onto something where 1 degree is just 1 degree. There is no such thing as a degree. There is no such thing as a sat. These are just measurements of size of something. So if it gets 20 degrees hotter, yes, it got hotter, but you don't get to individually isolate each degree as being unique and somehow differing in one way. A degree is just a degree, and a sat is just a sat, but they only are used in a context of measuring the size of something. They are not something you can isolate. The ordinal concept requires it. You know, you have 5 sats, or you have 50 sats, or you have 1 million sats in a UTXO. You don't have a first sat and a second sat and a third sat. That's not a thing. And this is they're not individually identifiable. So its undermining of fungibility isn't a massive thing, but it is one nasty element of how it works that's just antithetical to Bitcoin. One Bitcoin does not equal one Bitcoin is the essence of chain analysis and undermining of Bitcoin as a functional money. You can't need to care about what the Bitcoin is when someone sends it to you. You just need to know that it is one Bitcoin in size. You don't need to know what it is. Because again, money's only efficient if we treat every $10 bill in the world as being worth $10. If we all have to worry about, it becomes barter again, if you suddenly have to care about how valuable each one is, because it's not one chicken, you know, 50 chickens equals one cow, but how healthy are the chickens? How old are they? How much food do they need? Do you understand how inefficient that is and why that makes barter just awful? For trading. So trying to turn Bitcoin into a system where you have to care about the value of each sat because they're not all the same is just fundamentally, let's make it less usable as money. But this isn't even the main point. Let's go back to the question you asked. You have all sorts of degradation of in Bitcoin of using these different things when you're trying to treat it as a database where you can store different kinds of data that have nothing to do with monetary activity. There's loads of other things, and some of them are more technical than others, and bloating of the UTXO set is the topic du jour, because the supposed rationale for blowing up the limit on op returns, which don't bloat the UTXO set, is that spammers will stop bloating the UTXO set, who are currently doing so and are apparently motivated to do that, specifically in this sweet spot range between 81 and 150 bytes, where at the moment, op return will be a bit cheaper, but they can't because nodes are filtering out that activity, so they make fake pub keys instead, which are more annoying for nodes because they have to treat them as though they're valid outputs, unlike op returns, which are provably unspendable. And the whole theory is that after 150 bytes, it doesn't make any difference because they all start using witness data instead, using the inscriptions hack. And then we might as well just make op return as big as possible. So different harms they do. UTXO bloat's definitely the worst. Op return's definitely the best, and it's more expensive than the inscriptions hack. The inscriptions hack is their favorite because they get to get a massive discount depending on how much data they use. And that is the one they go for, and there's no filters at all. We don't try and figure out whether the input data that gets this 75% discount typically is actually someone doing a Bitcoin transaction, or they're just sticking a bunch of data inside trying to trick you into thinking it's a Bitcoin transaction.
No, and if you look at who's making money off of this, it's the usual suspects, right? And it's.
Can you tell me who? There's a new Crater video, right?
Yeah. Matthew Crater or Crater. What's his name? Crater. Made a video like about where the money is going. I don't like to name names, but let's just say that the people that are against knots and against spam filtering are usually associated with companies that make money off of spam. So it all makes sense to me. And like from what I can remember, we, in the good guys, are the same as we were back in 2017 fighting the big blockers. It's the same people. So none of this is shocking to me. We won then. So we won the battle. Yeah,
it's the same battle. It's just been fought in a different venue, but it's the same battle. Who wins? Is it nodes or miners? Okay, it's nodes. That was who won in the back then, and it's who needs to win now as well. But nodes don't bend over backwards trying to get miners to earn a little bit more money or something like that. That's just not how that is not the hierarchy of this pyramid here.
No. And shitcoiners are going to shitcoin. Like it's addictive to them to do this things over and over. Funny thing, this is from the Crater video. He talked about Richard Hart in the beginning of it, which is an infamous scammer in the space. I can't name him because he's fake Toshi level shitcoiner, right? He first got rich from a email spam, from an email spam scam thingy, sending like 6 million emails to people that didn't want emails. So he started his whole career spamming, and then was a good voice for Bitcoin for a while until he decided to shitcoin. And I met him on the night where he decided to shitcoin, where he basically told me, I also want a Lambo. I'm going to do this thing. And I thought he was kidding. And like a year after Hex was born and he started scamming people. It's just awful.
Yeah. I mean, they want it. Some people just get green dollar signs. Like, I'm never going to do this. I'm allergic to this stuff. Like, at some point, my account might get big enough that I could make a six-figure amount shilling a scam coin to everyone that's following me. I'm just not going to do it. I took the slow approach. I'm going to wait for Bitcoin to be worth enough that I don't have to ever sell out like that.
No, that's like, you can only sell your soul once, right? And there's no refund. So like the only reason where we are right now, all three of us, is because we never took that bag of shit coins dangled in front of our eyes to shill some shit, right?
I don't agree. I think reputation is proof of work. It's a social currency and you can earn it back. It's really hard to do, which is why it's proof of work. You can embarrass yourself and make mistakes, and you can recover from that, and people do. And like, we should be gracious and allow people back. And I think everyone says, if Roger Ver wants to stop being an idiot and stop telling us that Bitcoin was hijacked and that it was actually him that wanted to make blocks bigger against all sound reasoning, that we'd be fine. He's a great advocate, and he was an early supporter of Bitcoin for a lot of really noble principles. And I'm not going to forget that. And I will defend the fact that he's, you know, being extorted by the US government. I will forgive people, and I think people can learn lessons. But shitcoiners tend to become so rancid and so resentful of Bitcoiners calling out their scam that they dig themselves into this grave where they just hate us. And it becomes this miserable thing of diminishing returns where each scam gets less and less than the previous one, and they just become more and more miserable, and you know, and they become Bitcoin deranged. I've seen that happen a lot.
No, I believe in forgiveness too, a lot. Like, and we're all fallible. We're all human beings. So I'm very willing to forgive people, but that doesn't take away the fact that, like, if you actually tried to scam people at some point, that's a very bad act. Like, there are nuances to this. Like, you can forgive a cringe tweet more than you can forgive actually trying to take people's stuff.
I mean, Roger calling Bcash Bitcoin on bitcoin.com and calling actual Bitcoin Bitcoin Core. You know, because you could buy bitcoins on bitcoin.com, but he was pushing Bcash instead of Bitcoin. And, Bitcoin Core is ridiculous, right? That's, you're naming it after an implementation, not a protocol. That's just stupid. Like, he could have called it BTC and BCH. Yeah. All right.
Malice or just ignorant? No, like, do you think he believed in that Bitcoin Cash actually was Bitcoin? Like,
yeah, I think he was trying to not trying to cede linguistic territory. He was trying to insist on maintaining the lexicon as he believed it should be. And I can respect that. I actually can, even though it annoys me. I understand why you might want to do that. Like, I understand other contexts where people do similar things, where they're like, you're renaming a thing, and I don't agree with the direction you're taking it in. I believe you're stealing all the goodwill that exists around this concept, and I want ownership of that, and I think it belongs to this concept. I understand why he did that. I think calling it Bitcoin Core is really embarrassing, because I think he should have just gone with BTC. Instead of calling it Bitcoin Core, that was silly.
Come to mind are liberal, vaccine, what else? Woman, all of these things are.
Yeah,
people
sure,
want to change the meaning of.
Yeah, they do change the meanings of things, you know. But Roger is going to insist that we were changing the thing, and it was more a ship of thesis kind of thing, right? We are replacing elements of what Bitcoin does while keeping the name and losing the original essence.
He also said, I did it once with Bitcoin. I'm going to do it again with Bitcoin Cash, alluding to that he's sees Bitcoin Cash as another thing.
Good luck with that, mate. I'm sure. The trouble you have is Bitcoin didn't exist when Bitcoin was trying to bootstrap itself. It does while you're trying to bootstrap Bcash. And those guys are like, Bob Burnett did a video on those people that was like Filipino soldiers and stuff that were still fighting World War II in like 1950 on like deserted islands where no one had ever gone there and been like, yeah, it finished 5 years ago. And like when they did, they refused to believe it. They were like going to die fighting World War II, even though it finished. That's how I feel when I come across bee caches in the wild. I'm like, guys, it's over. It's definitely over. Like, but as I said, the problem is it still does relatively okay versus fiat. So it somehow remains alive anyway. Like BSV is the biggest embarrassment I've ever seen. And I see them everywhere. And I still see, what's his name? I keep losing my train of thought lately. The ADHD has just gone insane lately, guys. But
you're gone full BSV ADHD. Heads,
and it's like $50 or something, BSV, last time I checked.
Yeah.
I'm like, how is it not zero? No, it's never going to go to zero. Because that would mean fiat would actually have to be fundamentally worth something.
No, And that they made it a fork of Bitcoin Cash and not a fork of Bitcoin. It's hilarious.
There's so many forks there. Bitcoin Cash is a fork of itself anyway. We try to keep the old fork going with something called Bitcoin Classic. Do you remember that? They had Sean Connery as a mascot. Did you see all this?
That's hilarious. Yeah. And that was because they had to change the difficulty algorithm temporarily, like proving that they were centralized.
Because we kept messing with it because every time the price dropped too low, their entire hash rate disappeared and went back to Bitcoin proper. and that was ruining their network. So they had to contrive it all and make the blockchain a complete joke to the point where whoever it was that keeps changing around how the algorithm works might as well just maintain the ledger rather than pretending there's any sort of genuine proof of work barrier here. That's what I'm worried about with Bitcoin. Is that if you start putting miners in this position they're in right now, and you're prepared to trust them with the integrity of the network without using these proof of work heuristics, then you don't need a blockchain anymore. You're just another centralized ledger. And this is the
then you are a database. Congratulations. Yeah. Bitcoin is a database.
Yeah, you
right?
win.
You win. Yeah.
Yeah, right. And this is my contention with these people that are trying to redefine Bitcoin as being just a database. I'm like, well, Ethereum's a database too. So why is it different? Why do you see different activity on these different databases? What's the point in being that obtuse and pretending that they're just the same thing? Is that not just instantly annoying to you? And doesn't it make your skin crawl when people try and do that?
Yeah, for sure. But this is the thing. I don't believe any of these quote unquote technical people some of them weren't ever Bitcoiners. They never believed in the project. They never believed in the actual decentralization of it and the promise of like sound money for damn near perfect money that could act as sound money for humanity forever. Like they never thought about generational wealth or anything like that. Like I think they're just not coming from that perspective at all. They just see a program or a protocol.
Yeah. Well, it's sad they don't get it. And this is the thing about the developers versus the Bitcoiners. I do think, you know, this hostility that's built up from the devs being like, you guys are idiots. You don't know how to write C++ or whatever it is. You know, you don't know what signed integers are. Go away. I get that. I understand why they feel that way. I would too if I knew about how something had to be technically implemented and I was an expert in it and people were annoyed on an ideological basis. I get all that. But like I said earlier, it doesn't make you an economics expert because you understand how Bitcoin, the protocol, works. Right. You understand it on that level. And also, here's the much uglier part of it is that Bitcoiners are extremely committed to this thing and they've been here for a long time and it's a lifeline for them. It rescues the blue collar activity from the bloated bureaucratic class of people that don't do anything for anyone, but can continue to exist because of the money printer. Bitcoin is the savior of all that. It's the correction of economic allocation in a society, and we've celebrated that forever, right? That's what the Bitcoin standard is. That's what hard monetary standards promise. That's the rejection of Keynesian economics. We love all that, but none of that stuff is meaningful to people that are young kids that are experts at computer science but have never really had any real world experience, because if Bitcoin fails to them, they can just go and work somewhere else. That's the problem. And like people, blue collar workers that have been saving in Bitcoin for years are doing great thanks to Bitcoin. Someone that's an expert in CompSci can just go and work for Google or Amazon or whatever. Like if they're in Bitcoin, great. But it's just a curiosity for them. It's a profession. It's not a lifeline. So if we want to talk about incentives, that's relevant.
So is the way that core developers are funded a problem in that sense? Like, would there be another way to fund them that would make them more aware of reality, for lack of a better word?
You're going down the line of dev tax, which is just some cryptos tried that. That ain't going to work for a whole bunch of reasons. We're not doing the dev tax where developers are paid to make Bitcoin better. Like
that sounds like minor tax.
it's all terrible. It's all central planning. Basically, the tried and tested method is we go batshit insane when a developer does something we consider to be against Bitcoin, which is what we did to Gavin and Mike, and what's basically happening here as well. But in the current state, the trouble is it all looks so horrible. It's really political, and you know, everyone is getting very defensive, and it's an unpleasant environment, and I get that. But this, at the same time, the stakes are high, and we're going to quarrel. And people that are like, this is horrible, I don't want to deal with this anymore. If some core developer quits over this drama, I'm not going to lament it. Like, you need to be able to withstand the pressure, and you need to be able to withstand blackmail as well, by the way, because of the influence you have. And we need to have some sort of defense mechanism for if and when Core, who have basically centralized control over what the protocol is because of how essential Core is to everything, we basically have to hold their feet to the fire if stuff starts going in a suspicious direction. And that's the situation now. Like, if Foundry start doing OFAC compliant blocks, or start 51% attacking the network, which they can, by the way, because they're big enough to do it. It's just not a perpetual success. I'm not going to say it doesn't matter because mining is decentralized. I'm not going to pretend it's something it isn't, right? So the fact that most of the nodes on the network, the overwhelming majority of them are Bitcoin Core, and they're run blindly and naively by Bitcoiners, you have to have this defense when people say, don't the Bitcoin Core devs just control what this protocol is? Like, you say it's never going to be more than 21 million. Don't those guys ultimately say that? And Gloria went on Peter McCormack saying, we don't have the control that people might think, because if we do something bad, you know, there's checks and balances internally. And once it gets past that, no one's forced to run our software or upgrade. You can use something else. Well, we're seeing the realities of that now. And what happens is there's a massive political rift where people that run the alternative client that might actually be, you know, something that people, that's not a laughable option, not works. It's been around for ages. When you start running that and start championing it, it turns into left-wing, right-wing politics immediately. Everyone on the not side is called a Nazi, because they want to do something that's considered narrow-minded against a different use case and discriminatory. So the people on the Core side are classic leftists. They want to start smashing down boundaries and playing philosophical games, saying there's no such thing. A border is just a line on a map. There's no meaningful difference between a human being born in America and a human being that isn't. All these kinds of things that don't pay attention to how the real world works, but sound good philosophically, versus the conservative element that says Bitcoin is just this, stop messing around with it, let me have my fences and my boundaries, stop telling me they're useless and that they're immoral. And basically Bitcoin has now got a left wing and right wing. And my temperament is right wing. I am naturally a conservative, but I also understand that fits generally with libertarianism, and I can always bring it back to those principles. Why should you not have control over your own mempool? Why do you want to participate in immoral activity and storing JPEGs on everyone's nodes for the rest of time? You don't have to participate in that. I'm taking personal responsibility for that and not doing it myself. So if we want to get philosophical, I think I have a good way to defend it. And if we want to get practical, I can point to Bitcoin's past and say, we always filtered this stuff. It just means putting nodes at the top and saying, to hell with miners that want to disrespect it. That's their problem. And so I think we have practical and ideological arguments on our side. And I think they have practical and ideological positions on the Core side, neither of which hold up. It's not valid in any context to say that you lose control over your own mempool, no, which is what they're basically doing. You have to relay this stuff. And then they backwards rationalize it by saying, oh, you're going to have worse fee estimation, or there's going to be further centralization pressure of mining, and all these like technically true points that I keep saying are basically irrelevant in the context Bitcoin exists now.
Yeah, their arguments are counter to the idea, to what Bitcoin is, what Bitcoin is for. They're counter to letting Bitcoin solve the problem of it. That is exactly the problem that Bitcoin solves. It takes central planning is taken out of the equation. It's rules without rulers, and they're trying to act like rulers. then the whole point is gone. How about this analogy? Like, El Salvador now is on a Bitcoin standard and blah, blah, blah. So the theory is that there will be a brain drain from countries that don't adopt a Bitcoin standard to countries that adopt this Bitcoin standard, or at least like people who treat clever, productive people better will get more clever, productive people. So, and that will in turn force those other countries to change eventually, because otherwise they're doomed. Is the same true for this Knot's Core War, that if Knot's is able to put as much pressure on that Knot's at some point will be able to put that much pressure onto Core, so that Core will have to change? Like, is this political backlash? I mean, it already did in a way, because they removed the PR and said that it was, what was that word, they starting didn't. With D.
They didn't. All they're doing is, like I said, they're splitting it into two chunks. They said, all right, we're nuking the filter and we're not letting you configure it anymore. That was the initial PR. Now they're saying we're nuking the filter and it will remain configurable, but not for long. But it will be in a capacity where it does so much less. They're going to basically, by default, make it useless, then say, look, we told you it was useless, and then get rid of configurability. And that was, you know.
I guess the question is there any amount of pressure from Knot's nodes actually being such a big part of the network? It's like 9% now or something, right? So they're forced to change.
It's about 9%, and I contend that that's all real, by the way. I don't think anyone is doing an Amazon web server spin up. Those are very obvious when they happen. I think ultimately Bitcoin should just get stuck in a good way, basically. This is the ossify position, right? Like, I think ultimately it becomes really difficult if you have a couple of clients out there, because ultimately in any political situation, there's going to be a bunch of people in the not side that internally disagree as well. Like, a good example of that is some people aren't into the 40-byte compromise of op return. They think it should be zero. And there's already a disagreement of that nature in there. And as far as I can tell, on the other side, there isn't so much personal sovereignty as a highlight. It's more playing adherence and being a vocal sycophant to Core as people, and, you know, vouching for their integrity and just mocking people that don't go along with it. So
trust the experts.
It has been that. It's been absolutely disgraceful to see that, to be honest. Like, Kala is, you know, the guy that does Cashew, has been one of the most disgraceful people in this whole discussion. Just basically, Luke is insane. This guy's not mentally stable. You can't trust his stuff. And then digging through Knot's and finding cheap gotchas, like the fact that Knot's by default stops working after 2 years, unless you actively say, I want this to carry on working despite it being 2 years out of date. Now, they were like, this is the most insane thing I've ever seen in any software. This is so disingenuous. That is an unsolved problem in software development, is what do we do about people running insecure ancient versions of this software? Do we make it break? Do we force updates and give ourselves unilateral access over their machines? None of these are good solutions. Do we write perfect software that doesn't have any bugs in the first place? Yeah, like, that's possible. So every solution is bad. And actually, I never knew about this until yesterday, and I'm like, that's genius. You can run ancient versions of Knot's if you want. You just need to do so intentionally. You say, I really, really want to run this old version. That's a really elegant solution, actually. And trying to say, oh, this guy's insane. It's just gaslighting. And we haven't done that. I haven't called any Core developers insane. I'm not doing that. And I find that to be just disgraceful behavior. I really do. Shinobi came out saying, you know, Mechanics lost his mind. He's trying to drag as many people down into this swamp as possible. I don't know what his agenda is and what his game is. We're not the ones with the money, man. We're Ocean. Jack Dorsey was a big funder of Ocean, and he's against us in this battle, as far as I can tell from the statements he's amplifying. So
that is so odd.
Well, this is, I mean, Jack's his own man. So anyone that says there's some sort of agenda here, we're the underdogs. Ocean is 0.8% of the hash rate. This isn't particularly an Ocean thing. This is something Luke believes, that I believe too, that a lot of normie Bitcoiners agree with. I don't mean normie in a derogatory concept. I just mean like not part of the intelligentsia that's bubbled up. And I'm really disappointed to see people like Greg Maxwell come up with these lazy arguments about block propagation slow down and fee estimation getting worse and all that. Again, these are all just nonsense arguments in any kind of real context. It's not big blocks where we say it'll get harder to run a node if you multiply the size of a block by 20. Yeah, that is actually going to make it ridiculous. You're not going to have a 2 terabyte drive anymore. You're going to need expensive stuff to run a Bitcoin node. You're going to take forever to sync up to the chain. In fact, you're basically going to need a data center to do it. Then you're just PayPal again. That's a reasonable concern about making blocks big. But if I'm perfectly prepared to dismiss the concerns they have around leaving nodes the ability to filter spam, even if they refuse to implement any new filters and just watch while the spammers just find ways around it. But yeah, as far as I'm concerned, my side has the high ground, and obviously I'm going to say that, but every mistake I've made, I've managed to come out and say, look, I got this wrong. Initially, I was saying on Guy Swan's podcast, when this all first started, I said, you know, that they weren't motivated to switch from their current method to using op return because the current method is cheaper. I got that upside down. But the reality of me getting that wrong is actually that the truth is worse than I first imagined. Core really are just moving goalposts around on nodes unilaterally, silencing people that disagree with it in order to make life a bit cheaper for a spammer. And they're using the excuse that it prevents UTXO bloat, when the UTXO bloat in reality blew up from 4 gigabytes to 12 gigabytes in 2 years after Bitcoin having been around for, 14 years. In 2023, suddenly the inscriptions hack becomes a thing, and it goes from 4 gigabytes to 12 gigabytes. We lost a whole class of hardware about it. Now you can't run nodes on low-end hardware devices that you could up until 2022. We lost that. And the fix was the inscriptions filter, which they said, this is too controversial, we're not doing it. I said, all right, so you core cannot merge controversial PRs, fair enough. Now here's another controversial PR, one that goes in the opposite direction, one that tries to help the spammers rather than try and get in their way. That one's controversial too. Well, it turns out we have these moderation policies. We'll just kick you off GitHub. And that was what happened. And that became that's our most SJW type behavior, has been crying about Mechanic getting banned off of GitHub. I've barely mentioned it because it's not really that interesting and it just sounds like I'm a crybaby, but it is relevant. Why is it controversial when we want to add a filter, when all the people adding the controversy were the list you were about to give of people that are financially vested in adding a bunch of crap into Bitcoin's chain? You're fine getting rid of that. But with a similar controversy that comes from people like Luke and a bunch of other legend Bitcoiners, we just get ignored and the pull request gets, pushed through anyway. I'm sorry, one side here is the trust the science experts. And I hate using that because they tried to make us all, my node is vaccinated, I'm running knots. They tried to initially paint us with the COVID idiot like brush. And obviously Luke was terrified of COVID and he went around in a mask for ages, but Luke's not vaccinated. And that is something that I always say the Venn diagram of people that are terrified of COVID and wore a mask forever that didn't get a vaccine because they also didn't trust it is like one person in the world. It's Luke. That's it. Like everyone that was terrified of COVID and wore a mask just got vaccinated the minute it came out. And the people that were like, I couldn't care less and didn't wear a mask unless they were forced, they didn't get vaccinated. So the not side is definitely the minority, the people that refuse to trust the science and the people that don't like getting spoken down to and silenced by holier than thou, arrogant, I guess I do just call it the Bitcoin intelligentsia. I don't know. Ramble over. Sorry.
And some core developers kicked themselves off of Twitter afterwards. That was funny.
Well, that's Gloria, man. And I feel bad about it.
It was glorious.
Yeah. I feel bad about it. I do. No one wants to be, harassing some woman and make it so that she has a shit time or a shit experience and then she, deletes her account.
No, but you weren't harassing her, man. Like you responded in sound ways. She was being disingenuous and very, very passive aggressive. Like I don't think you did anything wrong there.
I appreciate it because the tone of it was like, look, I disagree with A Chow and I disagree with other core devs, Fanquake and stuff, but they're not like, I'm sorry, you need to be equal to the responsibility placed in you. And you are one of the five people with right access to the most important software project in the history of humanity. And if your public relations in that regard is just snark and condescension and rudeness to people that actually really care about how this thing turns out, I'm not a developer. I'm not going to go through her commits and be like, oh, this wasn't the most efficient way to do that. I'm not going to be able to analyze her ability on that in that way because I don't have the technical ability. But social heuristics aren't useless. And if people act like teenagers on social media and they're in that position, I'm going to be very concerned about that. And a little bit of poking and prodding, like, hey, can you maybe like act like you take this thing seriously, please, rather than you're just like an overgrown teenager that wants to provoke people? Like, can you maybe just get that together? And it just got worse and worse and worse, right? And I genuinely think this is not even technical. It just became personal. And I think I could have said something completely inaccurate and people would have just liked it anyway, because it became, we just don't like the person at this point. Right. And we just don't like the way she's behaving. It's not equal to the responsibility that's been placed on her. Right. So, you know, that's ugly and it is politics. And I say, it doesn't make me feel great. I didn't wake up stoked that Gloria had deleted her account because of this endless ratioing that had happened. But if what I would have liked to have seen happen is, look, I'm going to stop gaslighting you. I'm going to stop calling you idiots and mocking you all the time. Let's actually have a discussion about it. Because it really does seem like here are the benefits to op return being increased. And we don't believe it. But the problem is there is no genuine argument there. You have no reason other than, yes, we just want to roll over for spammers. That's why we're doing this. Otherwise, they've threatened us that they're going to bloat the UTXO set if we don't increase the op return limit. And we have no good argument to that. So we're just going to do what they're telling us. That's just cowardice. And trying to say to people, we've decided that cowardice is the only option here. There's not really a lot you can do except mock people that disagree with that approach, which is what they chose. So, I mean, some core developers have chosen to keep their mouths shut for it, which is a lot more sensible because it's indefensible. But everyone else that tries to go, hey, actually, I think you're all idiots, and I'm going to declare that on Twitter daily. Yeah, big surprise. You're going to end up in a situation where you just end up humiliating yourself and you end up doing what happened. So that's my rationale. That's my thought on why she's gone from Twitter now. But, you know, I feel bad, but I don't think anyone's interested in that. I got called an awful person and I had some, you know, that was someone that I was friends with at one point. And I had to say, all right, I have to consider, am I an awful person here? And I'm looking back through the things I wrote on her tweets. And I'm like, no, I don't think what I've written here is awful. If she was like a random person on social media, yeah. But you're one of five people with right access to Bitcoin. You need to be able to stand up to this stuff. And the pressure that's being placed on you is appropriate. And if you can't deal with the pressure and you can't go, all right, that you can't look at yourself and say, why am I in this position? Am I acting in a way that's equal to it? I'm sorry, then you should be gone at that point. And that sounds harsh, but I think it's correct. And I think a lot of people go, yeah, fair enough. Like if I see someone writing that kind of stuff and I get on an airplane and see that they're the pilot, I'm like, great. I really don't trust this pilot. I don't want to get on this plane. Same vibes. And someone is going to absolutely crucify me for saying all that, but I'm being completely honest about my perception of what's going on here. And I own the fact that I'm not able to go through the code she's written and verify her competence that way. I agree that's better. Maybe she's the best developer in the world, and I'm a complete asshole for writing all that off based on social heuristics. If that's true, I will own that and apologize for everything I just said. But I'd be very surprised if it is.
Yeah. I mean, it is what it is, this whole thing. We'll have to wait and see. And just happy to see both Ocean and Knots being used more and more, that there is a force in another direction. Like, even if you don't like Ocean or Knots as concepts or as things, you should like the fact that Bitcoin is moving in different directions and that there are alternatives coming up. Maybe even be happy that there are still shitcoins, because that means that those at least those shitcoiners aren't doing that particular shit on Bitcoin. So you should be happy about that.
Coins work. I so appreciate shitcoins now. Bitcoin. Yeah. Keeping them out of Bitcoin was the most brilliant thing ever. And this is, all right, let's end on like my favorite analogy in this whole thing. And the poetry of it is the whole point, right, is when Jesus became angry, and you're going to cringe because it's religion. When Jesus became angry, the bit everyone knows about is chasing the money changers out of the temple, right? And the Bitcoin Knots, as the software project itself, is literally named after the knots in the whip he used against the money changers. And that, to me, is allegorical of the entire mess we find ourselves in. We're infested with people inside the holy Bitcoin, with just who are in here doing the most silly nonsense, gambling and casinos and stuff, and we're angry and we're trying to get them out. Crypto was a separate garbage temple made out of plastic rather than marble that they all used to sit in, and we just convinced them it was the same thing. And they all just stayed over there in Ethereum land. That was great. I appreciated them being over there and not polluting what we have. And now that's all died and come back to life and died again so many times that now they're over here and we have to get rid of them. And I'm like, can we rebuild that other crappy temple, please, and pay its bills? Make sure they have water and electricity. Keep them over there. I don't want them here. And to me, the knots thing is just poetry.
It's a great analogy. Is that in the actual Luke section of the Bible, or is it somewhere else? Do you know?
I don't know. That would be funny, too. I don't know. I should know the Bible better than I do.
Anyway, thanks so much for doing this with us. It's been great, absolutely fantastic. I want to urge our listeners to do a couple of things. Like, go to, I linked this in the chat, the WTF happened in February 2023. Very good website where you can see where some of this stuff happened. This website, this address is based on another website called What the Fuck Happened in 1971, which is also another great website where you can say where Nixon went off the gold standard and the dollar became a true shitcoin. Also, look up more of these things, especially like the Matthew Crater video that I talked about before. We're going to link to that later, maybe. You can look it up. Like, the point of that is not the video itself. It's about looking up who is making money off of these things. Why do they have the opinion they do? And sure, you can say that Mechanic is biased because he works for Ocean, and Ocean makes money if people run knots and use the Ocean pool. But Ocean are completely transparent with everything they do. You can follow the money exactly and how much each miner gets paid out. It's transparent.
We're going to make a way for people to verify tides locally as well, which is going to be really fun. So you can say, this miner, give me all of their proofs of work. I want to verify that they did what they did and actually were that cut of the share log. And then you can see, all right, well, they did get paid equal to that.
Yeah. So look that up too. There are so many. What's that company called? UTXO something
management.
UTXO management. Yeah. This is one of the companies that are promoting spam stuff. Look up who's on the board of that company. Look up what Marathon is doing and who runs that and what they have been doing. All of this stuff. It's all connected, without being too conspiratory here. Just look it up. It's interesting, all of it, before you choose to take a side here. Yeah.
A lot of Starkware, right?
That too.
Well, they're the shitcoin, do shitcoin. Like, they're just.
Yeah.
I struggle to get into the details of these guys, but you're trying to round off the show, so I'm going to stop messing up your flow. Sorry about that.
All right. Okay. And also, if you can build a time machine, go back in time and see how many of these people had .eth in their handles two years ago, like because there's quite a few of them. Anyway, is there any way you want to send people mechanic? Do you want ocean.xyz is a good website, I know.
That's the anywhere place to
else,
go.
Anywhere else than that?
Nope. That's all I've got for now. But yeah, bitcoinknot.org.
Bitcoinknots.org. Yeah.
And if you want to run a Bitcoin node easily, go start9.com and get one of those servers.
Yeah, here's Daniel Prince in the chat. He's also great at following the money.
He's done some good research. There's a bunch of very suspicious investors in these companies like Taproot and stuff. They're not what you want coming into the Bitcoin space and hiring up developers and stuff and pushing for soft forks like Opcat and stuff. Please no.
That's another good source. And some of these companies are funding mempool.space, for instance, nowadays choose to show these things as data instead of a shit emoji, which they used to show them as. So I don't want to attack any of this. I just find it interesting. It does sound like an attack, doesn't it? Anyway,
if you're going to talk honestly about terrible things being done by terrible people, it's going to sound like not very nice. I struggle too.
We tried. Go to bitcoininfinity.com and find some books and t-shirts and stuff, and go to geyser.fund/project/infinity to join our Bitcoin Infinity Academy and our Telegram groups and get more involved with us and what we're doing. And see you at the conferences in the future. What conferences are you going to, Mechanic? Will we see you next time?
Too many. I have to go to the Bitcoin Magazine one, sadly, at the end of the month. Oh,
sorry.
I'm not trying to. Look, David Bailey has done gracious things in the past.
And I'm freeing just, Ross was a great thing. Yeah. Thank you, David Bailey, for putting so much pressure on President Trump to free Ross. That was a great thing.
It just goes to show you that no one is just completely bad or good. Sometimes people you disagree with on almost everything will do a great thing. And he definitely did a great thing there. Nonetheless, I really am allergic to all of the NFTs and ordinal sponsorship stuff that goes on at that conference. And I really hate seeing it. I think it's an insult to what we're building with Bitcoin. But I'll be there anyway. I have some things to do on the main stage. And I have some meetings just because everyone goes there, and that's you have to be in town that week because that's where all these meetings happen. So I have to do it. And then after that, just bits and pieces. Nothing really super confirmed yet, but Ocean needs me to go to various conferences. So I do.
You're coming to Helsinki.
Apparently I'm going to Iceland. I've never been there. Sorry, Finland. Finland.
Moomin Valley.
I'm going there. I'm not a big fan of going to Europe from the West Coast because it's just awful jet lag, and I'm trying to not do it too much. But I've been told I have to go to this, so I'm going to it.
We promise to do everything in our power to make it worth it to you.
I appreciate that, and my hesitancy shouldn't give anyone a wrong impression. It's going to be a really good conference, so anyone not sure about going or not should definitely go to this. Solid Bitcoiners.
Yep. Luke knows a really good barber or two in Helsinki too. So we'll show you. Yeah. We both need one.
Mr. McNamara, thanks so much for joining us. This has been awesome. When I don't talk, it's a good thing. It means you guys are having a good conversation. So thanks so much for this and keep fighting the good fight, man. Seriously.
Thanks, mate. Thanks for having me, guys, and speak to you soon.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. This has been Bitcoin Infinity Live. We're going to try and keep this up. So thanks for joining. Thanks for contributing in the chat. Go do all the things.
Thanks again. Brush your teeth. They're scarce and useful.
That, over and out.